Shelter in place. I hadn't heard that phrase until recently. Now it's a common statement. When you think about it, it's actually a blessing that we haven't heard it. Because you don't need to shelter in place when things are good. Of course, the phrase itself isn't found in Scripture, but the practice is. Remember Gideon? What is Gideon doing when we are first introduced to him in Judges 6? He's in a wine press trying to thrash a little wheat. Why? Because the Midianites have taken over the land and the people are sheltering at home. Or in other words, hiding from their enemies. The walled cities of the Bible and of human history are based on this same principle. Within the walls, there was a greater measure of protection. So people worked in the fields, tended the flocks, practiced some skills, and engaged in commerce. But at night and in periods of threat, they would shelter in place behind the rock walls. Now, obviously, during periods of siege, we also see this approach, like the siege of Ben-Hadad in 2 Kings chapter 6 and 7. And for us, it's also a type of siege as well. Probably not too much different than what we're being encouraged to do. Our enemy is the virus. One of the ways that we can counteract the enemy is to hide from it, so that we don't come into contact with the enemy. People in those times weren't able to work. They did without when they were inside the walls, sometimes up to and past the point when the supplies ran out. But as I thought about examples, I thought of Elijah, the prophet of Israel, during the time of Ahab and Jezebel. In 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 1 through 6, we find, "Now Elijah the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gilead said to Ahab, 'As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years, except at my word.' Then the word of the Lord came to Elijah, 'Leave here, turn eastward, and hide in the Kirith ravine, east of the Jordan. You will drink from the brook, and I have directed the ravens to supply you with food there.' So he did what the Lord had told him. He went to the Kirith ravine, east of the Jordan, and stayed there. The ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning, and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook." Elijah informs Ahab there's going to be a drought. What's going to happen to Elijah himself? Well, God directs Elijah to a place where he can shelter in place, in a ravine in the wilderness. What about water? Well, there's a nice little brook there. What about food? Ravens are going to bring him meat and bread. And that is, of course, what actually happens. Now, I don't know where you are sheltering in place, but my guess is it's better than where Elijah stayed. At least you have a roof over your head, a comfortable place to sleep, and plumbing. Most of us have company to be with so that we aren't completely alone. Although some of us are alone. Remember, we're hiding from an enemy. Our enemy is a virus. We can't see the enemy. That's part of the difficulty. It's like the wind, and we can only see the effects. Now, what about that food? Do you really want to be fed by the birds? When I was a kid studying this Bible story, my teachers made it sound like the ravens brought little pieces of Outback steak and cheese biscuits from Red Lobster. Now, it certainly was miraculous and amazing the way God intervened with the ravens. But have you ever really thought about how ravens deliver food? Probably not, and you likely don't want to do so. Elijah wasn't on a camping trip to a national park. He was sheltering in place in the wilderness. Now, we've been sheltering in place for a while now. For most of us, approaching a month, and you may be getting tired of it. Ready for some more food variety or more entertainment choices. The whole ordeal may actually be getting the best of you. You may be ready for a change of scenery, a change of menu, some different activities. Maybe you've done all the puzzles and watched all of the episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond. But the isolation starts to take a toll, even more so if we live alone. Now, we have it so much better than people did in the past. Comfortable place to be, we can communicate with others. We know what's going on in the world through TV and online media and more. I know for me, I've never been more grateful for my Kindle than I have been in the last weeks. I'm not a gamer, but many enjoy that. And although food is a risky process, at least at this point, there's food to eat. Many in this area have places where they can walk and be outdoors. And as the world comes to life, you can't help but see the hand of God. Even the lawn can be a positive outlet for some hard work. And these circumstances give us a lot of opportunities. And yet, there are people that you miss. Family members that you can't see, can only FaceTime with. It's better than nothing, but not really real. Maybe you have people in your family or even in your extended family, people that you care about, who have underlying health issues and you're really afraid for them. Maybe you miss people at work, coworkers who are important people in your life. How about the people at church that you miss? People you enjoy seeing and interacting with. People who build you up and encourage you in a variety of ways, even if it's just talking sports and sharing a fun story. There are people that we share our burdens with who aren't available to us as we need for them to be. Now, if you are lonely, it's okay. Doesn't mean you don't value the people to whom you have access. It simply means that you miss the ones that you don't. There are still things that we can do. We can find ways to help others. Even if it is as simple as sharing a funny cartoon or a heartwarming story via email. Our phones still work, and for now the mail is running. On Thursday, I went to the mailbox, and there was a card from Sharon Pribble. Brought a smile to my face, and it lifted us. Elijah thought that he was alone. Twice in 1 Kings 17, in verses 10 and again in verse 14, Elijah says, "I am the only one left." Now, we know better, and we'll talk more about that next week. Elijah wasn't alone. He just felt that way. Of course, God is always with us. But sometimes we feel like we just need more. It's an old story of the little boy who's afraid to go to sleep, and the parents advise him to remember that Jesus is with him. And several times the boy comes out of his room and his parents give him the same advice. Finally, the little boy comes out and says, "I know Jesus is with me, but I need somebody with skin on." God knows that. In Genesis 2, verse 18, at creation, the Lord God said, "It's not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." God recognized at that point that as people, we would need other people. And God helps us and blesses us by meeting that need in a variety of ways. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 and following. "Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken." Solomon is confused about a lot of things, and cynicism gets in his way. But he understands the power found in relationships and the need we have for relationships. Psalm 68, verse 6. "God sets the lonely in families. He leads out the prisoners with singing. But the rebellious live in a sun-scorched land." And actually here, there's a double application. We're born into biological families, and that's a wonderful thing. And yet God provides for us spiritual families as well. And so we get two opportunities to miss the loneliness that we could so easily feel. Elijah says, "I'm the only one left." God actually brings him into a family, a physical family. The story is found in 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 7 through 24. Elijah leaves Kereth Brook area. Why? Well, the brook dries up. It was a negative thing that he likely didn't understand. God directs him to Zarephath in the region of Sidon. There he comes in contact with a widow who is making a last meal for she and her son. Elijah tells her to make some for him as well, and she says, "I only have the very end of the oil and the very end of the flour." And Elijah promises her the oil and the flour won't run out. The Bible doesn't explain why Elijah was sent to this particular family, but he literally becomes a part of that family. Now, why did he go all that way to find someone that God could use to help him? Well, late in that chapter, the boy dies, and Elijah raises him from the dead. This little family provides food and companionship for Elijah, and Elijah provides God's healing for the boy. I believe that God brought them together for the purpose of how they could mutually benefit each other through him. Likely neither of them realized how God was walking ahead of them. During this time of crisis, it's quite easy to turn over thoughts to our inward selves. And when we focus on ourselves, we begin to feel disconnected from others. And that can lead us to a sense of isolation. And we can get caught up in this trend. Before the coronavirus pandemic, sociologists were referring to the epidemic of loneliness. And when you roll both of those things together, what a frightening mixture. We were already at a bad place, and now we're divided and disillusioned. As bad as this thing is, there's still an opportunity to meet others at the place of their need. And when we help others, we help ourselves. We step out of ourselves. And even when we express a need, we're suggesting to other people that they have something important to give, and that's empowering to them. Satan wants us in our individual places, because alone we're easier to frighten and control. Elijah had the courage, strength, and faith to meet the crisis head on. Elijah was God's man, God's person, but he experienced hard times. He was faithful, but even he was tempted to believe that he was alone. And again, we'll look at more of that story when we meet again next week. Satan wanted Elijah to feel alone. God took care of him. God provided what he needed, physically and emotionally. Wasn't necessarily an ideal circumstance, but God never left him. Because he was faithful, Elijah was okay. But more importantly, he was able to be God's instrument. As I was walking last week, I saw a neighbor whose grandchild was visiting her through a closed glass door. It was time to go, and the child threw a fit and was carried kicking and screaming back to the car. The little one just couldn't understand why she couldn't hug and play with the grandmother that she so obviously loved. Well, there was danger, especially to the older person, and in the end of it all, the child had to ultimately be forced to trust the parent. Isolation leads to loneliness, and you may feel that creeping in, bringing you down or leading you to discouragement. Don't let it take root. Don't let it defeat you. In John chapter 8, verse 29, Jesus says, "The one who sent me is with me. He has not left me alone, for I always do what pleases him." Jesus isn't saying that God never leaves him because he does what pleases God, as much as Jesus is saying that he, as the Son, always wants to do what pleases the Father because the Father never leaves him. God never leaves us, but we can leave him. Father, help us to feel your presence. Help us to know that this difficult time will pass. May we be aware of what we can do to get outside of ourselves. Give us the strength to act on our faith, to know that you will never leave us, and to allow you to direct our paths. Pray this in the name of your Son.